Welcome back to Questions with Crocker and my husband. How you doing, Shane?
I just did a bunch of expenses.
Oh, that's always fun for the hospital. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about that right now.
No.
Are we losing money or making money?
This month was not a good month.
Okay. What else has been going on this weekend other than the fact that we have lived at the ballpark with our kids the last couple days?
That's about it. All I can think about is expenses.
Okay, well, do you remember when we were dating and we would say, when we get married one day, we will not spend all our time at our kids' sporting events. We will make sure that we have a life outside of that.
I remember that.
What happened?
We had kids.
And they're athletic, so I guess that's not a bad thing, right? All right, so let's get right into it. I actually had a really interesting question come across on social media recently, and I figured you would be a great person to run it by because honestly, I was really stumped at what the answer would be. And I don't know that there is a concrete answer. But first, I wanted to get into a little spelling definition quiz for you today. Are you ready?
Is it how to spell expense?
No. We're going to move past the expense part. How many days will it take you to get over this?
Two more.
Okay. We'll let you go golf tomorrow. Maybe that'll help.
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so I would like you to spell pruritus. And also, if you know what the definition of it is.
Pruritus. P-U-R-A-T-I-S.
That is not even close.
That's pretty close.
This is one of the hardest words to spell. I still spell it incorrectly and actually don't write it. So it's defining that a pet is really itchy. So you'll say they're pruritic or they have pruritus. It is really hard to spell. So it's P-R-U-R. I actually wrote it down to make sure I told you right. P-R-U-R. I-T-U-S. So you completely bombed that one, but you're not the only one because in veterinary medicine, I think almost everyone has a really hard time spelling that unless you're a dermatologist and you see itchy pets all the time. But other than that, completely get it incorrect. So
do they say the same for itchy humans?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Any human doctors out there listening to this, please let us know how you spell or if you use the word pruritus in people also. And do you know how to spell it? That would be the other question. Speaking of if you're listening to this, we would love it if you would start to follow us on any listening podcast platform that you are hearing this on. If you would like it, share it. We're also going to release the videos on YouTube so you can actually see us in action together, see my handsome husband and
see
me. He just
paid a lot of bills.
And see me looking like a hot mess half the time. But I'm excited to be here and answer your guys' questions and share a little bit of the knowledge that we've had. Just a real quick recap. So I'm a veterinarian and I'm an emergency vet. We also own a general practice hospital together. And we are coming up on our 1 year anniversary for that. Are you excited?
Mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that you just had to pay some bills.
Yes.
And then Shane is an entrepreneur. So we own several businesses and he is, I guess, the chief financial officer. I would say you're also the chief operating officer also. You kind of make sure things get done, like the COO. Isn't that what they do?
I don't want that role.
Oh, okay. I feel like I come up with the big ideas and then you either say, absolutely not, or you say, let's think through this. Okay, how can we get this done?
That makes sense.
So COO and CFO. And I'm DVM and CEO and everything else pretty much.
Yes.
Okay, that works. So I feel like we're a good team because running a vet hospital, you have to wear a lot of different hats and you wear a lot of the hats that I don't know about. So this question that I got, I thought was really interesting. And I think it's something that we will backtrack a little bit on and lay a little bit of a foundation and then get into the question. So I had a vet student ask me, she said, I really want to own a practice one day, but the practice that I want to own is one I used to work in when I was a technician. I'm planning to go back there and work after I get out of school, but they recently sold to a corporation. What I want to know is, do corporations ever sell back private practices that they bought to private practitioners? Does that ever happen? And so I thought, one, we should first lay the foundation for if you're thinking of buying a practice or going into practice ownership, what are your options when you're looking at that? But then two, circle back to the question of would a corporation ever sell a practice to a private owner? And what would that look like if that happened? And that's where I really think you could help out. So first things first, when we started talking about owning a practice, I learned what a de novo was. I didn't know what that was. So why don't you explain kind of what you have to think about when you're looking at going into practice ownership right off the bat? What's the decisions you have to make?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of decisions. One obviously is, do I purchase, right? and the others, do I start from scratch? And that's kind of the definition of de novo. They both have their positive attributes, and they both have some negative attributes to them. When you're purchasing a clinic, you're obviously probably paying a little bit more because you're buying the goodwill of the practice, meaning their customers, their website, their phone number, their location they've been in for a number of years, et cetera. And the thought around that is you're going to have immediate revenue coming in. So you step in, you take on a lot of debt, but you immediately have revenue to, A, pay the debt, but also pay yourself.
Are you saying it's more expensive to buy an existing practice most of the time than to just start from scratch?
It can be more expensive because typically if you're starting from scratch, you're just having to invest in the assets and then a capital injection to run the business. You're not paying for the goodwill at that time because there's really no goodwill for the company. Now, that being said, you could buy an older practice with assets, but the assets don't have a lot of value because it's so old. So I can't say that buying a practice is always going to be more expensive than a de novo, but a lot of times it can be, depending on what you're buying.
Especially based on the location that you're going to, yes. Right? So we know real estate's much more expensive in some areas. And I would say that played a part into us buying an existing practice versus building, because where we live, the cost of building was going up dramatically and land costs a lot more.
But I would look at that as two separate entities, two separate transactions, right? You have if you're buying a practice, you have the purchase of the practice. And then if you're buying the real estate, a lot of times you're buying that real estate in a separate entity and that practice is renting back from that other entity.
Okay.
So whether or not you buy the real estate is really another business decision. It shouldn't necessarily wrap into your decision to buy a veterinary practice. That makes sense.
But I do think location is so important. And a lot of times the prime locations are always already taken by the businesses that have been there a long time. And that's part of our hospital. We drove by it, you know, every day for years. And we realized that the location was just something we couldn't pass up. And that it was somewhere where it was continuing to grow around it, but it had been there so long that it was such a staple in the community, and that was really important. So you have to kind of decide between startup versus buying existing practice. Definitely good and bad about both. I think for us, the positives outweigh the negatives because we knew we were buying a well-established, had been there, 40 years. SEO was great on the website. A lot of clients that were super loyal. The veterinarian who worked there wanted to stay on. That was huge. And a lot of the staff was on board initially with the change. Obviously, things have changed a little bit there. We've lost a couple of staff members. And I think overall, we've gained a lot of new team members that are great. But that has been a transition. And then a startup, to me, honestly, that's what I wanted to do. That was really where my head was at. And what I thought was, if I can make it exactly what I want, especially in the building, we have bought an older building. It has to be renovated. That was part of our agreement going into this. But I felt like with what I want the client experience to be, I needed to have a building that was set up exactly the way I wanted it to be set up. So buying a practice that was already set up a certain way, to me, was kind of frustrating because the flow and the efficiency that I wanted wasn't there. And I don't really feel like I've opened up the marketing floodgates because of it, because I don't want to bring a ton of new clients in to a building that is not really showing who we are, I feel like. But if you build a practice, you can make it as cool as you want. I look at places like FinVet that Cody Curlman has done. And I mean, that practice screams FinVet and their culture. And I love it. And so I do think that was a kind of a big trade-off for me. And that was a lot of discussions that you and I had. But ultimately, once we renovate, I really feel like it's going to feel more like what I want in the long run, even though it's going to cost us a little more money.
Yeah. Also with the de novo, you have to take into account the time to start up as well, right? So you may have a great idea of a perfect location and a perfect build out, but you still have to go through the process to get that approved through a city. So trying to get through city council and whether or not they even allow another vet hospital in a certain geographical area is a whole different, you know, set of issues you have to run through.
So if you're buying a practice, can you actually put in there like stipulations of, we're going to talk about the price, we're going to talk about everything, but it's contingent on city approval, the sale? Or could you buy a practice or buy a piece of property that you want to turn into a practice and then just be shut down?
You can. In the commercial real estate side of things, if you're buying the real estate, you can, in your diligence process, have outs that allow you to get out of that contract if you can't get something approved, either the type of building you want or the layout that you want or the amount of space you need. There's some outs there, but you have to do that, you know, inside of a window that you negotiate.
I think part of that also has to do with competing against corporations for different vet practices, right? So you can start your own and you're not really competing against corporations because most of them are doing de novos. Most are buying practices. And that leads us back to the question that I got, which is, have we ever heard of a practice that was sold by a private practitioner to a corporation and then was sold back to a private practitioner from a corporation? So I wanted to get your initial thoughts on it. I do think there's a lot of variety out there. And again, we are not experts in the business or corporate world. We're just in veterinary medicine. We are owners and you have a business background. And I spend a lot of time on social media hearing about different things going on. But what is your initial thoughts and feelings about that?
I'd be very surprised if the corporation sold an individual hospital back to other vets. That's my initial reaction. Just the thought of what they're trying to do for the most part. You know, typically a corporate organization is an aggregator of assets. So they're looking to piece together as many clinics as they can in hopes that they can use that as leverage for purchasing power and then take that to the next step to either sell it out to a larger corporation or bundle that into, you know, existing type of groups. So the only reason I think they would sell an individual back practice back to an owner would be if their model changed and then that specific practice was outside of their model. So let's say they started acquiring a bunch of hospitals and they acquired one in Texas and then decided Texas isn't a market they want to be in. So they want to leave that market. Then they may would sell those individual hospitals back to private owners. But in the environment we've seen over the past 10 years, I don't anticipate that would ever actually happen.
I agree. I do know that there are some corporations that their model is we will partner with you and we will help you become an owner. They say that initially you can actually, you know, get ownership in the practice. Now, whether that's through getting a percentage of it or buying some of it over time, but I don't know how many of them actually sell you back the practice.
Yeah, and typically that's not a one practice, right? They're giving each individual owners the ability to own a piece of a much bigger organization. And I think that's the appeal to an owner, right? Let's say you're an owner that owns a one doctor or two doctor practice that does X number of revenue per year and makes, you know, Y. The thought is you can put your practice inside of this larger organization and now own a piece of this much larger organization that we're going to grow 10 times or 20 times and much faster than you can grow as an individual hospital. So the appeal would be to have individual doctors be a part of a larger organization, but not necessarily spin out one practice to have somebody else buy it.
Do you think that's how they're combating kind of the feeling sometimes that they come in and they just kind of chew up parts of the industry and spin them back out and they don't actually give back as much? Do you think that's like a marketing strategy a little bit for them to have people sell their practices to them by saying, no, we're not going to own it 100% and you'll have ownership in it too? Or do you think that they truly believe that that is the best way to do
things? Yeah, I mean, obviously there's probably two sides of every story and then the truth, yeah. Right? So deep down, I don't know that all corporate practices are the big bad wolf, right? I think a lot of them may have great intentions to bring owners along and have them exit at some point in the future, you know, much wealthier than when they got in. So I don't think that corporations necessarily use that as a marketing tactic with, you know, bad intentions. I really think their intentions are probably pretty good. Now, whether it works out that way or not, it's a whole different ballgame.
But I would probably tell the person who is asking this question, one, they're a vet student, so they have a lot of time, right? And I often will caution vet students who are trying to go back to like the practice that they came from that, you know, it is very well known that however you were seen initially when you met a group of people, it is hard for them to see you a different way. And so it's a pretty big transition to go from, you know, being a technician somewhere or being an assistant or receptionist, becoming a veterinarian and then going back there in general. But I usually tell them to try, you know, different places, check out different options too, because I think we get sometimes so focused and think like, this is what I need to do and I'm comfortable in this situation, and we don't think it all the way through. So if they really wanted to rejoin that practice, I think there's a lot that they need to talk through first. And if they want to join that practice with the hopes of buying that practice themselves eventually back from a corporation, that just needs to be laid out on the table right away. Like, that intention and that discussion needs to happen, because the last thing you want is, and this, you know, happened to me, is to join a practice and say, I want to be an owner, but never have anything written in stone, right? And so then you're just kind of told, yeah, we get that and we support you, but nothing ever actually happened. So I would definitely tell the person asking this question that, you know, I think it's great they want to be a practice owner. I want more young veterinarians to want that, but I want them to set themselves up for success by having those conversations and not just having like some broad, hey, I'm interested in this, I'm excited about it, but having like a very real conversation about what that would look like. And so that's another thing I kind of wanted to briefly touch on is, you and I have talked a lot and talked to a lot of people that wanted to buy hospitals that they knew and were familiar with. And when you get into what that looks like, there's a ton of options there too. It's never as simple as, I want to buy the hospital, you're going to sell it to me, this is the price and that's it. There's a lot of other things. So what are some of the general things that should be talked about if you're wanting to buy a hospital, especially if you're trying to join a hospital with the intention of buying it eventually? What are some of the things that you should be putting on the radar with the current owner, and questions that should be answered eventually, hopefully in a timely manner, for you to think that that's actually going to happen?
You could talk for hours and hours.
I know. I want a very brief
unpacking this can of worms.
This is a brief overview, and then the next episode we'll go more in depth about it. But I just want to hit on, like, if you had a few main things that you wanted to bring up, if I said, hey, you know, Dr. Shane, you're amazing, I want you to buy this hospital, what are some of the main questions you're going to ask me? Give me just three that I need to answer for you.
Yeah, I want to take one step back first. So so if I'm a veterinarian that's going to join a practice, right? At some point, you have to be thinking in your head, do I want to be a practice owner or not, right? And when you join a practice, you need to start having those conversations if your intent is to at some point own a practice.
Yes.
So I think, A, you need to make sure that the current owner or owners of the practice understand that your intent in the future is to own a practice as well. I think we're starting to see more practices that are multi-doctor owned already. Mm-hmm. So it could be that this person may not ever own 100% of this practice. They could be a minority owner or grow into a majority owner over a period of time. And that's a lot of questions about when you go into the practice as well. What type of practice is that? How is it currently set up? Who owns it today? Then you have to start asking, what does the time frame look like, right? You know, I want to be an owner. What type of time frame does that look like for me to potentially be an owner? Is that 2 years? Is that 5 years? Is that 10 years? And in that time frame, what type of position am I getting into? Is that a majority ownership, a minority ownership? Am I buying a little bit over time? And then how is that? How are the funds going to be transferred, right? Yeah. So you may not be asking those type of questions, but you need to start thinking about it.
You have to think about it, because especially the funding, financing side of it.
Yeah, I mean, you could very easily be a minority interest owner in a practice that's valued at $3 million, and they want to sell you 10% of their practice. That's going to cost you $300,000. Is that cash you have to come up with, or are they going to finance that $300,000 and take it out over dividends over a period of time?
Because, and you're going to be proud of me, you taught me that if you're a minority owner in a practice, trying to go to a bank and say, I want $300,000 to own 10% of this practice, the bank is probably going to say, ha-ha, you're hilarious.
Yeah, you got to have some collateral. I mean, right. Maybe you have a house that you have to pay for, and you can use that as collateral or something like that. But, you know, a lot of times trying to get loan as a minority interest in a business that you really have no say-so over the outcomes is going to be very difficult to happen.
Yeah, that was something that honestly I didn't even think about until we started talking about it more. And you felt pretty strongly that being a minority owner wasn't probably the right route for me, and yeah, I agree.
And I think this is with any business. You have to be careful being a minority interest owner in a non-liquidable asset, meaning if you own 10% of a vet hospital, you may never be able to sell that 10%, right? and you have no say-so over the direction of that company unless you negotiate that in to your right. buying power. You may only own 10% of the company, but maybe in the operating agreement, you have certain say-so in different business decisions. So I think that's an important thing to remember as well, is that even though you may be a minority owner from a stock standpoint, there's an operating agreement that dictates who does what inside the organization. So you can actually carve out certain things inside of that operating agreement that allow you as an owner to have some significant say-so. That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think that that was one of the bigger things I learned from you early on, and also allowed me to ask a lot of tough questions of, you know, my past boss, and really determine that there wasn't a plan. And that...
No, I don't think there was an immediate plan.
Right.
But I think the intention...
The intention was there.
Was there.
100%.
And I think that's, you know, that's, again, you asking the right questions. You understand that, yes, the intention's there, but our time frame may not be matching up at all,
yeah.
right?
And so, in the long run, it kind of allowed me to say, I probably need to make a change because this timeline is frustrating for me. But if I hadn't known that and I had just kind of kept trying to wait it out, the frustration just would have built and that would have ended up badly. So we both agreed that it's highly doubtful that a corporation would probably sell a practice they owned in a group back to a private owner.
And if they did, I would start asking some very serious questions as to
red
why.
Flag,
right?
Red flag.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you think about the reason that these organizations buy up assets, and the thought is that they're going to get 3 to 5 times their money in a 5-year period, if not more. You know,
right.
they're trying to get a significant return on their investment. It doesn't make sense for them to liquidate individual assets. Again, unless their strategy has changed and they're moving out of a market, or if they're dumping some assets because those assets just don't produce, you know, I'd be asking some pretty serious questions.
I agree. And I think that's a good future topic I get asked a lot about, is corporations versus private practice ownership. So we will get into that next and in the future. Continue to follow along, like and share, do all the things.
I love the idea about corporate versus individual practices. I mean, you could talk about this for...
And we have a lot of personal experience in it, too.
And there's great things and there's bad things on both sides.
Hey, don't give away the episode.
I'm just saying.
We want them to listen more. So thank you guys so much for listening. Remember that you can submit questions on any of my social media channels or on my website at dr.crocker@drcrockerpetvet.com.
Who? Say that again.
It's very simple. Just Google Dr. Crocker Pet Vet and you will find it. But ask any question. We are an open book. I always just tell people, don't ask a question you don't want the answer to, because we're pretty honest about our opinions. I hope you guys have a great day, and thanks for listening. Bye.